You have a network. It has anywhere from dozens to thousands of switches and routers and so on. What happens when you need to make a global change where every network device has to be touched to bring the network up to snuff? Do you put on a pot of coffee and crack your knuckles and log into device one and start typing? Probably not. You need to automate. Our guest today is Sal Ranazzisi, a director-level network geek at a big pharma company. Sal needed to update around 25,000 devices, and he's got experience with many different automation tools, but settled on Glueware, who is our sponsor today. We are going to walk through Sal's experience in just a bit, but before we do that, we're going to talk to Mike Howe, VP of Product Management at Glueware, for a little bit of level setting about Glueware and the state of the network automation industry. Network automation is an industry now, Mike. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ethan. Great to be with you and Greg here today.
Now, I was having a discussion with some friends of mine the other day, kind of in the back channel, and we were kind of, commiserating that despite all the SDN and automation tools and so on that there are in the networking world, we still don't have like consensus about how to do it and so on. And I know you folks have seen a lot of this too. So from Glueware's point of view, do you have an opinion on the state of network automation?
Yeah. I mean, as we go into enterprise IT, you have a very broad spectrum of experience and as well as positioning, right? And so what we still see, and most of the stats you read and, Gartner and whatnot put out stats and studies, we're still like 90 to 95% of network change management is done manually still. And it's puzzling, right? But those of us who kind of grew up in networking, I was a network engineer 20 years ago, and it is still CLI, SSH in the boxes and CLI. And when you do try to automate, the path they go on is first, maybe there's some vendor tools that can help, right? So you kind of get started with some vendor tools, and those will have some limited functionality and also have a limited subset of maybe it's vendor specific or maybe it's platform specific. And so you're going to have you might accomplish some goals, but it's certainly still leaves a lot to be desired. Then you progress into scripting. Back when I was doing a little bit of scripting, it was Tickle. The language of choice seems to change, every few months or a few years. Currently it's Python is the hot language for network automation. And while it can be useful, and the availability of tool sets and examples keeps growing, it can be pretty heavy lifting, right? It's a different skill set development, and a lot of enterprises have some folks playing with scripting, getting some things running, but again, it's very limited, like simple changes and things like that.
It ends up being like little use cases. I want to do a script to do this one thing. It's not a system. It's not something that manages the entirety of your network. It just handles little use cases typically.
Yeah, exactly. And when you write a script, you're going to want to write it as few lines as possible. So you're not going to code in pre-checks and post-checks and all the things that make it extremely reliable. You're going to kind of open up a connection, push a change, and then you might do some manual validation later, right? So you still end up with pretty limited scripting. And so if you continue on that path, that the jump to, let's say, to get beyond the 20% automated, is a significant gap to get to building your own automation platform. And we do see some of the higher end enterprise that, invest in essentially building software teams within their organizations doing just that. They're investing in software front end and maybe a back end developer and middleware, and they're actually building this out. And others are looking at tools or maybe standardizing on something like Ansible, which again, is a nice platform to kind of get you going quickly. But a lot of the things that are fairly quick with it, and when I say quick, it's usually, still months of effort, are simple changes. So it's difficult to get to complex changes. And, ultimately, even with Ansible, you're working in YAML, you're working in Python, and it is different skill sets. So it's quite challenging.
Yeah. I often talk about, Ansible is sort of like DIYing it yourself, and you can make exactly the right thing that's the right size, but you also have to have the tools and the knowledge to be able to do that. But there's also a possibility where you want something more like IKEA, where it's pre-built for you and you just have to do the final stage of assembly. And that's kind of how I explain Glueware to people, is you've got a whole bunch of stuff done for me and I just have to do the final part to bring it together.
I think what people find with Ansible is that, you know, there are some things that get you going. There's modules and there's playbooks, but they have a lot of constraints. So as soon as you want to extend beyond that, you're really diving right back into programming. And so, you know, it is a pretty significant investment of time and everything. And while, you know, that approach is pretty interesting, and Glueware is even considering publishing a module and kind of fitting in that, because as folks, and if they want to standardize it, you know, we might decide to plug into that because the approach is pretty clean.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting, I'd like to hear your feedback, with the IBM acquisition of Red Hat, it actually might stir things up a bit, because a lot of places where Ansible has been somewhat successful, they've been leveraged in through a VAR or someone with an automation practice that is selling services on top of it. And a lot of those service organizations now compete with IBM. And so I'm pretty interested to see where that goes.
I think it's also going to be, I think you're right. I think a lot of organizations who've been using Ansible today, because it's, you know, not a competitive situation, may see it as that's a business change. But I think there's a significant chance of the Red Hat organization being disrupted by IBM. And that might be something to be worried about. You know, Ansible might stagnate for a while they go through the transition. But, you know, I think the challenge here is Ansible is very much a build it yourself. You have to do it all. You do all the pieces and you have to build up skills and tests and validations. Whereas Glueware does all that for me. You give me an entire, you do the testing, you do the validation. So if I want to send configuration to Cisco device this or F5 file load balancer that, you've pre-done all that testing. I just have to think about what I want done, and then your value is you're doing a lot of the heavy lifting for me.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mike, give me some more of the highlights. You know, Greg just compartmentalized some of the value of Glueware from a network automation perspective. Can you hit some more of the highlights, things that are differentiators?
Yeah, absolutely, Ethan. One of the first things is that, and it was a change we really made into the third generation of our platform with Glueware 3.0, is there's a lot of turnkey functionality or functionality right out of the box, right? So the platform can go, you can very rapidly onboard your nodes with a drag and drop of a spreadsheet, and it will perform a dynamic inventory. So it'll go talk to the nodes and collect a lot of important information. And so just that inventory capability alone is very valuable to a lot of customers we're working with. And then it has turnkey functionality called config drift. So you can start to monitor what config is being changed and who's changing it. And once you tie in, you know, the automation of the configuration management, you can remediate. So turnkey functionality or getting something, you know, working very quickly is very important. And then we're multi-vendor. So we've gone to 18 operating systems, 14 vendors that we support. And that's always very important. And we can onboard vendors very quickly. So that's another one. You know, when we get into a new conversation and someone brings up a vendor we don't have, for us, it's literally days, hours to days to code in a new vendor adapter. And then, you know, usually just a cycle or release where we hook it into the various platform capabilities that we have. So we can enable new vendors very quickly.
So I'm chuckling a little bit because I think the last time we talked to Glueware was at the first virtual design clinic we did, where you guys demoed your product back in March 2018. And I don't remember what the multi-vendor support number was, but I don't think it was 18 at that point. So it sounds like maybe you've onboarded some even since then.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, again, that's where it gets exciting, because we'll have a great customer meeting and they'll bring up a new vendor, a new platform, even within a family. Like recently, while we supported the Cisco NXOS platform, we hadn't tied it into our OS upgrade, and just, you know, ahead of a proof of concept where it became a priority, we were able to code that in within a few days, add support, go into the customer, you know, with beta fully working, and now be able to turn it to GA. And so our cycles are very quick. And, you know, just the comparing to what customers are experiencing with vendor platforms is they've been requesting features to these vendor platforms and just they're not getting, you know, those delivered. And so being able to be extremely responsive is really a key factor in terms of proving to customers that we can meet their needs going forward. And so that partially in our ability to very rapidly onboard their need or solve their pain point, and we'll get into that with our customer we brought on today with Sal, speaking of his experience. And then supporting the existing networking. So, you know, we call it the brownfield. The brownfield or legacy support is extremely important, because you see new platforms providing API access. The legacy does not have that. And then finally, we leverage an orchestration engine, which allows us to, again, automate or apply data modeling and then very rapidly automate a customer's need.
Yeah, I think that you said a lot there, Mike, with those last 2 points, particularly, you know, brownfield, meaning you can apply glueware in an environment that doesn't have fancy APIs, and then, you know, model driven, meaning this is not just you blindly shoving configs into the network and hoping something good happens. There's a lot more intelligence that is going on in the background there with the way glueware does things. Well, let's transition the conversation here. First of all, Mike, thanks for the setup. Now, Sal, I want to turn to you. You work for a big company, lots and lots of devices out there. And maybe the way to set this up is for you to describe your network environment to us so that everybody listening has got an idea of what sort of an environment you're up against that you're trying to automate.
Yeah, well, thank you guys very much. It's a real pleasure to be here. We're here in New Jersey. I've been at this game for quite some time now. I've been following you guys for quite some time as well. The main thing that I want to make sure that people understand is we're a pharma company. We make products. We bring drugs to market. We're not an IT company, right? And as a result, you know, we have a lot of 360 sites, 40 manufacturing plants. There's a lot of expensive products out there on the floor, and they don't want changes, right? So, and, you know, we've been at this thing for a while. I bet, you know, we follow the same path that many people have done. The inventors of Ansible were here. I had quite a few people here, and we were really trying to wrap our arms around it and see what we can do with Ansible. We had the tower set up. You know, we had a 1PK. We had everything in a book that Cisco has invented. And I ran into these guys when we were doing DMVPN, and it was kind of cool, right? So we have a lot of Cisco devices out there. We said, hey, let's put this DMVPN thing in. And then, we kind of got stuck. We had a little issue, a little cyber attack issue. We stopped, but we did roll out some things. And then I was in the West Coast, and, Jeff and Mike were like, hey, come up and visit us in Sacramento. And we sat down for literally a couple days at the Glueware offices, and we went over this whole new Glueware 3.0, which is a config modeling piece, and it fits our network very well because we have 25,000 boxes, and a lot of them are old. Let's face it, right? We don't always go with the best and biggest thing. And when they showed us this thing, I mean, again, you know, we're not an IT company. Mm-hmm. It really, everybody kind of has their aha moment. And we were able to build these orchestration models while there. And then in January, we started building it all, and we went live in March. And it really was an incredible journey, to say the least.
One point you made, Sal, was that you guys had evaluated a lot of different tools. You even had the guys that made Ansible, you know, on site and talking to you folks and a lot of other tools. Excuse me, what happened to all of those tools? Did you just not use them, or did they become point solutions that you're dealing with? Or
that's exactly right, that there were just point solutions, and we had a very hard time wrapping our arms around what the end goal was. And we have a bunch of smart DevOps guys, right? And it was very hard to get real-world functionality. And that's what I keep saying to the guys, like, what disease are you trying to cure, right? And that was the problem, that it had a point solution for this. We were able to, you know, do a couple things like grab at the state of the routing table and, you know, put that out with Ansible or make some basic changes. But you really, it was all point solutions that you really couldn't coalesce it into a cohesive strategy, right? And you're exactly right. That was the problem.
You were assembling it yourself. You were putting this here and you're getting this, and then you grate some stuff to glue it together. And it ended up looking a bit, well, I guess, Frankenstein-y? Or...
Yeah, exactly. And it was very hard to show real-world automation. And again, to my point, it's a drug company. Like, what disease are you trying to cure? And these guys are like, oh, hey, I wrote these scripts, you know, with Napalm and SaltStack and all this stuff. But I'm like, okay, that's great, but how are you going to roll this out over 25,000 boxes? How are you going to make a cross policy change on, you know, all 500 of our routers and this kind of thing? And that was the hard part, right? Like, people did a point solution. They had one piece of the puzzle, but it was only one small piece of the whole kit and caboodle, you know?
No, you primarily a Cisco shop, or are you multi-vendor across those 25,000 devices?
You know, that's a great point. Until 2003, we were a Nortel shop. Now we're a Cisco shop, primarily. A few other pieces mixed in, but primarily Cisco. Exactly right.
Okay. Now, Cisco's got a whole bunch of tools in this space that I think in your first firehose deluge, you mentioned APKM, DCNM, 1PK, DNA Center, which are a variety of tools that do different things kind of aimed at different parts of the Cisco ecosystem. Did you find homes for any of those? And again, they became point solutions. Did you try to fit any of them into this, you know, managing the network globally?
Yeah, we did. We were able to get a few things done with APKM. They did do a few switches with it and some minor success with it as the project kind of ebbed and flowed and it kind of stopped now. It's all going into DNA. And of course, like we're a big Cisco shop. We have a huge Cisco team on our account. And, you know, we as we go, you know, we have people here every day almost, you know, someone from Cisco. And we really, tried to go down this primrose path with them. With marginal success, and that's the bottom line, that okay. We really couldn't build a real platform to grow into.
You also mentioned DMVPN. Now, I've got some DMVPN experience myself. A lot of folks do. It's pretty flexible. If you can write all the lines of code to make a tunnel, you can do a lot of neat things with DMVPN. What flavor of that were you using? Just DMVPN, or you actually had graduated to IWAN?
So we originally rolled out with Glueware 2.0. We rolled out a dozen sites with the initial Glueware, and they were a one-trick pony at that time, right? They did the DMVPN piece. It was interesting. We just did DMVPN. We didn't do PFR. We didn't do zone-based firewalls. We did DMVPN. We had this little issue. We kind of stopped, and then they announced Glueware 3.0, and we realized that, hey, so the whole kind of point that we've been talking about with Mike at Unug and things that we're rolling out SaaS, right?
Okay, Sal. So you knew about Glueware a little bit because you were working with it when it was, you know, before 3.0 days, and it had more limited targeted functionality. And so then as you had this SaaS project, okay, so before we get into the SaaS project, the setup for that was you mentioned something about a hack or some kind of I'm assuming something that drove a security initiative within the company?
You know, we had a little bit of an issue. We had a little cyber attack thing happen to us, and it was, I'll just leave it at that. It was very bad. I can't really discuss it at length, but that kind of stopped everything for a while. And then we said, okay, everything's moving to, like everybody, Office 365. And we had tried one of these SaaS things before where they turned on this cloud-based solution and they copied everybody's hard drive over to the cloud. And it just crushed us because we could not keep up. They turned it on, buried everything. And we just knew when this Office 365 was going. And another key point, guys, is that we backhaul everything now, right? Right now, finally, we're going to start looking at several other SD-WAN solutions. But we backhaul everything to direct connects at our US-based data centers. We have five data centers around the world. And we knew that if we didn't, we weren't able to change something very rapidly. We would be in a world of pain like we were last time they rolled out this this SaaS app.
Okay, so you've got a security initiative. Part of that is driving an adoption of SaaS, Office 365 specifically. You're moving lots of data around, data coming from your on-premises facilities to the cloud, and then you're also doing backhauling of data. I don't know if that's for inspection or just for direct connects up to the cloud, what the design is there. But in other words, you have to move lots of data around the network all of a sudden because of this radical change in Office services, Office 365 support now, OneDrive, is that part of it too?
Yes, of course, and Windows 10. So they're making all these different distribution servers all over the world. And we knew that we had to make many changes because there's been ad hoc changes for many, many years, right? And we're a very regulated company. I spend a lot of my time writing standards and they all get approved and all this stuff. But the problem is that people take a configuration, they copy and paste it to the next device, right? So we literally have commands, we had commands before Glueware that were there for, decades, right? That people just copy and paste it over and over and over again, right? And this was the biggest problem that we have, right?
Don't talk to the standards. Well, you've got a configuration management problem across a whole bunch of devices where you you know, legacy commands that were copied and pasted. No one really knew what they did, but they didn't dare take them out. So you've got that sort of configuration creep. You've got a bunch of data flows going around the network that you didn't used to have to deal with because you're moving all this traffic to and from the cloud. And you tried this once before and it didn't go well, you mentioned, because of you just getting pipes were getting crushed. So I'm assuming that means you had a QoS scheme you wanted to push out, a configuration standardization you're trying to get done across a massive 25,000 device network.
Yeah, and that's what I, you know, that I found with this. And I kept calling it real world automation, right? There was a lot of things. First of all, we had to fix the SNMP, right? Because we weren't getting the data that we needed to even monitor the stuff, right? So we focused on several things at first, just SNMP quality service. Then we added AAA, we added NTP and all these other things as well. And, you know, now we've done it six times. We can literally click one button, go and find the object in Glueware, type in one line of code in the SNMP list or whatever it is, or a class map, whatever. And we can click a button and roll out everything. And it's really quite amazing. And let me just, I'm going to go off on a little bit of another tangent. What I think and I know is the coolest thing that Glueware does, right? You, and Olivier said this to me, like, if you can describe it, we can automate it, right? So you build this model of automation, and then the tool is declarative, right? So show, run, begin interface, show, run, authentication, accounting, whatever. And then it'll take that data, compare it to a regex, and it'll actually take out what doesn't match the regex, what you have in your list. And that is very significant, because not only were we able to land thousands of commands, we took all this stuff out that was in there for years and years and years. So it was pretty dramatic. If I known it, you know, I should have probably kept track of all the stuff as we're going, but we're under such pressure to get this going. Like, I didn't keep as, you know, a stats, but I mean, it really, so for the first time we can say, like, all of our WAN routers have the same set of parameters. And that was pretty amazing. And we've done it like six times now. So every time you click the button, it's going out, removing things and putting things in, it's just incredible.
But how you far had we've come. You had to sell this to your internal networking team. You had to, because I know there were people sitting in that group going,
of course,
oh gosh, the pucker factor had to be absolutely huge. So what was the process you went through to get everybody comfortable that this tool was going to do the right thing and not blow everything up? And I got to actually tell a quick anecdote. Early days of these kinds of products that were not particularly intelligent, you know, we're going back a decade or more, where mostly what they did was push configuration changes. If something got wrong, either you built a template wrong or the machine or the automation tool got a little bit of a mind of its own. It wasn't an automation tool, it's a wrong term. A configuration management tool got a mind of its own. You could, as I like to say, fail at scale, where you push a bad change out to a lot of devices and there's not really any check or balance So how do you get past that?
I want to do that as a t-shirt. I think fail at scale would be a good motto for packet pushes.
It was. I can assure you that we are a very large company with many people. We took recordings. We did very long training videos. And operations, of course, like, mean there was they asked for some features that we added to the tool, but it wasn't easy, guys, as you know. And fail at scale, that's a good one. It was an iterative process where we kind of built it from the ground up. We're like, look, we have this problem, and we you know, brought people down the primrose path with us, and still, you know, I mean, there was a couple governance points that they wanted a clear log of, you know, who can do it. But you're right, people were so scared. I mean, it could be the nuclear option, right? I mean, you could literally click on something, make a one simple change, and blow out the whole thing very easily, right? Because it's only doing what you ask it to do.
Yeah, but I think one of the key things about Glueware is you can actually do all the change that you want and then actually go and read the CLI that it's going to push into the device. It's not like it's just mystically calling, right? So you can actually verify this. If you have this sense of, if you want to get over this, you want to improve your risk analysis, you can actually do it all in Glueware and then say, show me what you're going to do, and literally read the configs if that's what you feel is necessary.
That is a great point, and I call it the get out of jail free card, because you can preview a change. And it will tell you what's going to go out and what's going to go in. Very interesting things, quirky things to iOS, that the way it reads access lists and the way it writes them are very different. So Glue will say, oh my God, this access list, like if you put something at the bottom of the list, and hopefully I'd love once we get all the corporate stuff out of the way, I would love to do a live demo on your YouTube channel or something, which would be awesome. But it will take out the list because it detects a change, right? If you put something at the bottom of the list, the iOS will put it at the top, and Gluer says, oh, hey, wait a minute, that's a change, and it'll take it out and put it back in. So very interesting things, but you're right, but you can see what was changing, and then you can take that data, that log, paste it into your change management tool. Now, of course, people are a little upset that, wait a minute, you can't make, you know, 300-400 changes at once. We're like, oh, yes, we can. Watch, hit the button. So we were pushing it. We did 13 at once, then we did like 30, then 50, then 100, and now, just last weekend, 400 WAN routers. Boom. Done. We're done. It's just amazing.
You built up the muscle. And
of course.
Yeah. I just want to, that's what I was getting to, because it's not just I didn't imagine that you went 400 routers from the first time. You built up over time, but it's doable. You didn't have to do this, you know, pull out the hand grenade and drop it in, you know, the holy hand grenade of Antinor and drop it into the WAN.
Of course. And I told my managers that Glueware is so smart, it automatically knows when the network needs to change and it'll go ahead and do it. But that didn't sell too well. But I tried to sell it, you know. But to that point, with config drift, and again, we're pyramid building now, right? Matter of fact, before I got on this call today, I was on with a bunch of ops people around the world. I'm like, look, we're worried about compliance checking. This config drift piece is pretty interesting because you have a JSON model and what you have built, and you do a snapshot, and it'll tell you what has changed. So it's kind of interesting because look. We have managed service provider, right? We're a large company. And to do one change, right? Anything over seven boxes, it's a project. Then you got to issue a PO, you know, transfer money, all this stuff. So we've really kind of circumvented this whole thing that you don't really, you know, you don't need a statement of work. You don't need to do a PO for these guys. You can just, you know, push this change out. So it's really fabulous.
You don't need to engage the ITIL change prevention process. You know, or risk management,
exactly.
Because it's something that's just done all the time, and then trust builds, and now all of a sudden making a change to every access list on 400 routers is like, we need to make that change. You do a review, but then you press the button and off it goes. It's a standard help desk task. It's not a life-changing, budgetable experience that needs project managers and multiple engineers.
Exactly right. Yep.
But it gets more complicated than that, doesn't it? Because you were using it on DMVPNs. Now, DMVPNs get quite complicated at times. And the Glueware engine that I've sort of looked into is actually really quite sophisticated. You alluded to it with the ACLs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we have built this tremendously large DMVPN model that we actually put firewalls in our data centers. Mm-hmm. And it's DMVPN 2, right? That we take traffic and punt it through firewalls at the data center. Now, obviously, this isn't scalable, but we have quite a few sites now that are going through security policy in the data center itself. Now, clearly, we need to move policy to the edge, right? And that's what I'm working on now. But you're right. This DMVPN thing that we built, it's pretty large and very complicated, right?
Yeah. And it gets out of hand pretty quickly.
It's very really cool. Oh, yeah. You couldn't do it manually. I mean, it's just too much. Right. But every piece of the puzzle is done now. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, so we have the building. It's like Lego bricks, right? We have all these Lego bricks that we built. Now we may be able to take one of these bricks like Ike or IPsec or whatever, or, you know, route policies or you know, a route map and use it for something else by just simply copying it. So, you know, again, like you're building this pyramid. And you can just add blocks or take blocks away or build it. It's been amazing. Like, so now, like I talked about config drift, we are NXOS. We're testing NXOS. That was always kind of a black hole in the Cisco thing, right? We're going to be able to build that. Switching, right? I just was doing code promotions and demotions. NAC we're doing now. So there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle, but I really feel like, you know, you can build something. Right. And it makes sense, right? It makes it consumable, let me break that down. Anybody can understand it.
Right. Let me break that back. Because I think what you're actually saying is there in Glueware, you find these little Lego blocks of configuration. So a switch port configuration. And then you have SNMP configuration. And then you have security access list or whatever it is. And then you build up these Lego blocks. And then you build them up in Glueware. But fundamentally, they're bits of CLI or bits of API push into Cisco devices. Mostly CLI, I would imagine. And then once you've got the Ike IPsec DMVPN 3 blocks all ready to go, you can start to use them for other things. So you could go down to the campus now and say, my default switch port configuration should look like this. That's a Lego block. I can repeat that Lego block 10,000 times for every campus switch port or every branch port, you know, whatever it is. That's what I'm hearing.
You are spot on, you know, and that's exactly right. Yeah, exactly right. And I really feel that, you know, this was only one of my part-time jobs before, but now we hired a few people, which isn't easy to do in this market. And it's really kind of my full-time thing now that I'm doing. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I was just talking to the guys, the ops guys this morning about, you know, about compliance checking. And I'm like, well, look, we have a better mousetrap. Like, why are you going to, you know, go off this spreadsheet and try to gather all these commands? I'm like, just describe what you want to do and we can automate it. But I mean, it's just like very vague things like, oh, test the state of BGP neighbors. I'm like, well, what's the command you're using to do that? You know what I mean?
So, run the command. Give me the command.
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of vague. So, again, but bringing people down the primrose path, as you can imagine, and you know, even you hit on this, it's very difficult at best. You know, it's been a challenge, doubt.
I mean, many of us have spent a lifetime working a particular way. And the thing that I would find attractive about Glue in your situation is, for many of them, they can bring all of that lifetime of skill around the, you know, reading iOS and knowing what each one of those things does, and you don't lose it. So, Glueware says, we're going to talk iOS CLI or NXOS or whatever, iOS XR, iOS XE, whatever it is, we're going to speak that language. So if you want to look at it in that we're still working in that language. We've just got this engine that sits above. It's kind of like an intelligence or a modeling. It's, but you declaratively make all the configuration changes if you want to be all scientific about it. You declare what you want, and then the engine goes and says, well, exactly. I know how to do this, and boom, away it goes, right? And it's
right on.
Yeah, it's not like the thing is that ACI, for example, changes everything. When you deploy ACI in a network,
I know,
it changes everything. Your switches don't have forwarding tables, or your spanning tree, they use the
I know.
The ACI is a really shocking change because you have to transition. Whereas Glueware is much simpler because it says you use all the same things that you've always done. We build them up into blocks, then we use the declarative policy engine to decide how we want to do it. And it just does what you've always done. So you could automate your existing data center network without having to actually change the actual way the network looks, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you can understand it, right? That you can say, oh, here's the thread of automation. Here's the global commands for NAC. Here's the global commands for this. And then you can make, we have some parts that are like standard data, like the NTP service, for example, and then just have it call that. But you're absolutely right. And that's the trick to the whole thing, right? Yeah. I sat this thing earlier this week with this NSO thing. And I'm like, look, I looked at these guys many years ago too with TailIF, and they were explaining this service chaining, all this other type of stuff. I'm like, that would take us, I mean, forget it. It would take us so long to get where we are. And I'm like, wow, I really am ahead for a change. For once in my life, I'm finally a little ahead. Yeah, you know, I couldn't do it with NSO. Can't do what I'm doing now. You can't do it. I'm telling you right now. Like, you could not. Maybe you could. How many thousands of hours are you going to throw at it, right?
Well, different solutions for different problems, right? You needed to fix what was broken.
Exactly.
Right? Or to make what you were doing better. So what you've almost done is taken your existing work and then automated. And that's what Glueware does really well. It worked with your existing brownfield, right? Mm-hmm. Supports your brownfield. Whereas other tools tend to make you change your workflow. ACI, I've mentioned that already, is a classic one. ACI changes everything. Right, you can't just stick it on top of your existing. You have to throw all your switches out and kind of start again, right? And everything has to change. You no longer have to worry. So all those things that you've learned and had all your process and everything, that all goes. And that's what I'm not always convinced that that's an answer. And so I think there's a difference between different tools for different people. And some people need to throw it out and start it again. And if you want that, then that's the right product for you. But this is I think Glueware is much more for more people, if you know what I mean.
Sal, let me ask you a practical question. Now, I know from our show notes here that you guys did go through a process of considering using outsourcing all of these changes to some third-party firm that would make all the changes on the network for you. And eventually you rejected that proposal, is my understanding from the notes. What advice do you have for people who are thinking, oh gosh, I wouldn't want to bring Glueware or any new tool in. That sounds too hard. I'd rather just give the problem to someone else and let them figure it out.
I would say send me your configs, and for a nominal fee, I'll straighten you away in a couple of weeks. That's what I'd say. Let's start our own. Let's sync up offline. We'll start our own managed services company, guys.
give me a call.
No, but seriously. Again, you know, like we have a managed service company managing our stuff, right? And you know, and the people who write these contracts are very smart. So more than seven devices, you pay. It's a project, and you have to pay. Right. Yeah. So yeah. we know how much it is for an SNMP change, how much for a quash change. I'm not going to say how much, but it certainly makes me want to start a managed service company. But that being said, like every time we click this change with Glueware, it's like ringing a cash register. Now, and again, that's hard for people to wrap their head around, right? Because it was X amount of dollars. And before, when we did the first software as a service thing, it took 9 months to finish. Right now, think about that. Right from and that's how you quantify like a lot of the guys at Glue were talking about the time to value. Right, that if we were doing these changes for this new project, this Office 365 thing, we would be dead in the water because there is no way. You know, first the cost would be astronomical, but they could not keep up with the amount of changes that were required. Right, and that's the whole thing. Right, so every time it's a finite amount of money that we're saving and we don't have to spend. Right. So now you can, well, as a cost avoidance, are we really saving money? It's like, well, we really would have to spend the money to make the change. But the difference is now, like, we can just, it completely kind of takes them out of the picture. Right. And so now, like, how much of this money that we pay per device, like, how much is that cost is going to go away with Glue? Right. And you got to wrap your arms around it. Right. So my goal is zero touch. And by Q1 of next year, there is no more typing. And I mean, come on, how long have we talked about this, right? If we make a model, right, and we have all the pieces of the puzzle modeled, we deploy it to a USB drive or whatever, somebody at the other end can unbox that router, put the USB stick in, and boom, you're done. You're on the wire, right? So that's all these things are what I'm driving toward now. And I actually have some time to do it, right?
You said something really important there. You said by Q1 next year, you're intending to basically have, you know, a hands-off approach. Everything, all configuration changes for, I don't know if it's just the WAN network or if it's a broader set, but you are going to be all Glueware for configuration management at that point.
That is my goal. The zero-touch provisioning thing is very important to me, as I mentioned before, right? I'm introducing new 9K switches. I have to write this big, long configuration document, right? And then people will probably have an old 3850 or 3750X document on their desktop, and they'll just copy and paste it over, right? So my goal is to model as many pieces. More, again, we built the base of the pyramid. We're building more models on top. We'll keep adding things to it, and eventually have the whole kit and caboodle modeled, and then send somebody that file or get it to them with a terminal server or however we do it, plug that box in, and boom, you're done. You're on the wire. It's in Glue. That is my goal. And I'd love to come back and tell you how far I've gone with this. And so I put on my objectives for this year to automate myself out of a job. And I think I'm well on my way.
No, we've also talked about different parts of your network. So we mentioned that the broad network could be described as having around 25,000 devices. Then we also talked about the WAN network with something like 400 routers, and you've also mentioned some switches. How much of this big network of yours is actually coming under the care and feeding of Glueware?
Right now, we have 500 licenses, right? But we're working on a few things in the background to buy quite a few more licenses. And we're having these debates now, like a layer two switch, for example, right? And the way they've done the licenses now, Mike, there's different pieces of the puzzle, right? So how many changes do you make on a layer two switch? So we're debating, like, do we need config modeling for that? Like, we're putting NAC in, right? Or just code promotions or config drift. So those are the discussions that we're having now, right? And again, it gets to the point, like, we're paying a managed service provider to manage a switch. How many changes do you make on a switch, right? I mean, you do code now, you know, with what happened to us, we're looking at pcerts and this type of thing, right? That we can, like the vstack was one of them, right? That we can do the vstack thing and take that out. So right now we have 500 licenses. We're going to buy quite a few more. And we're debating about like the root things, like what do we really want to manage? What is our intent, right? How many times over the course of a switch do you make changes on it, right? Do we need the config modeling on it?
I think the transition here is that you don't make many for fear, right? Or worry that the change is going to go.
Yeah.
But if you have the ability to do change reliably and predictably, you do a lot more changes.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because now I'm thinking about doing things that I've wanted to do for many, many years, right? Layer three to the edge. You know, we were running multicast between our two main data centers for OTV. I'm thinking, wow, we could extend multicast on demand first, and then we could extend it over the VPN tunnels. But now, like, we could do that rather painlessly, you know? I mean, but before, like, just the sheer scope and the money and these guys copying and pasting things in.
Yeah. And one of the very important points. Service provider's got engineers who can barely type, much less actually understand the configurations.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Greg, because, like, thanks for stating the obvious. Yeah, I know. It is what it is. Look,
you know? It is what it is. I mean, my experience of managed service providers is that incompetency is the normal, and they charge you per incompetence rather than per task, as I've always seen it. But I'm a little unkind. There are definitely good people at those companies, but quite often down at the edge where the actual changes are happening, you know, the day-to-day, those people are often not well put together. And if you can replace them with a product like Glueware, that's a total win. And I think that's what, to summarize what you're telling us there, is you can now start to do what used to take a managed service provider who probably didn't do a particularly fantastic job.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because what we found the first time through with this tool is that, you know, after the bad experience with software as a service before, we found quite a few devices that had no class on them. I mean, literally, that we paid even more money for then. And
yes,
it is what it is. I mean, so, but we found one in six boxes, to your point, that had no quality service on them that we paid and all this time. And it's like, but another quick point is, like, we have dozen different router models, right? We have 3725 still, we have 2800s, 3800s, you know, and then 2Ks, 3Ks, 4Ks running dozens of different versions of code. And it's all abstracted. And even though the official stance from Glue, where it was like, we don't support these things, but yet again, it worked fine, right? And that's the thing that I think people have a problem with. They would just copy and paste. And, you know, QoS is one of, you know, a very
every
difficult
platform
thing
is
to
unique.
Do. They would copy and paste it. It would fail. And then they would just punt on it. Well, oh my God, we have to finish five more sites today. And they would just punt it. But all that is abstracted now, right? And it
copy
doesn't
and paste
matter what version of
Yeah, when you go back and look at the configuration of the configs, what it took, because it was all wrong. Yeah. No, I've not. I've seen that before.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
Of course, I've never seen that. No, that would be totally
The truth hurts.
Sally, I got another one of these practical kind of questions for you, or really an observation. And it's kind of been implied through the whole conversation, but that is, you don't. It's not an all or nothing with Glueware. You don't have to turn over the entirety of a device configuration to Glueware because of this Lego brick approach. Now, you've mentioned, well, we started with, you know, QoS, and then we did SNMP, and now we've added NTP, and then you're moving on and considering other things that you may choose to manage with Glueware. So you've got this flexibility that means you can choose what to do, not to do, and kind of reduce your risk maybe in that sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and the thing is, like, I've been very lucky. I have a full lab here in New Jersey. I actually built a real site with MPLS and you know, internet circuits and every flavor device that we have. So that's been the key part of it, right? That we have a real platform to test on, right?
Yeah, but
and that's been great.
Let me just add some reality that you're a large global farmer. The risk of something going wrong, you would need to do that to validate that this sort of massive transition in the way that you operate your network. To me, it's not that massive because Glueware is not changing anything. It's just doing some of the automation for you, right? But for a lot of people, they would see this as, like, you know, mystic shaman magic, singing songs and shaking a stick with feathers on it.
You're right. But you're absolutely right, guys, that we took small pieces of the puzzle. And then we can simply do the preview change. Okay, this works. Oh, no, we have to tune this. Our regex didn't match. Let's change it. And then we said, okay, well, let's add this piece of the puzzle. Okay, let's add it. Let's add this. And now we're at the point where it's like we're adding more and more and more things. And, you know, but you're absolutely right. If you just have one pain point, for us, it was QoS and SNMP, by all means, change that. And then add more bricks, right? Test it. Roll it out. And then do the whole thing. But again, it's like – it's so easy. I mean, you just find this object, right? And you can go into tool. Oh, here, copy and paste. You paste your commands in, save it, test it, and boom, you're rolling. So it makes it, it's like, you can understand what it is. Where with NSO and Yang data models and XML, it's like, it's hard to wrap your head around it, right? You know, but this you can.
So a practical question about doing business with Glueware. What was the purchase process like? Any comments that you want to make about acquiring the product? Did you get this downloaded package and you were on your own? Did you have to buy services? How did it all work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I just like to throw out there that it was an iterative process, right? We had the tool, we built it on site, and we did some small statements of work with these guys, but it really was a whole different thing than working with large companies. They're really partners. We worked through it together. We went through and built this thing. And look, we were the first people to ever use the config modeling. And it really was a really positive experience. That, you know, I really feel like we're partners and they're invested in our success. And as we kept going through, we kept building more and more and more to get where we are today. But it really was what a great company and really smart, nice people. It really was an amazing experience, guys, going through the whole thing. And I certainly appreciate it after so many years and dealing with so many things that I've dealt with. But it really was a great experience.
Well, Sal, thanks for chatting with us. Your exuberance is overwhelming, and we thoroughly enjoyed the conversation with you. Genuinely, this was great, and maybe we got to circle back around and have some other chats with you just to talk more about your automation experience and how things are going. So, Mike, I want to flip back to you. Since we have you on the mic now, would you mind giving us a Glueware roadmap update? What's coming in next versions?
Yeah, absolutely, Ethan. I do want to thank Sal. His energy and excitement is contagious, and you guys have managed to wrangle him into sharing some great information, so I appreciate that. Just looking at our product line here with Glueware, we have major releases about every quarter, actually about every 8 to 12 weeks, roughly. Glueware 3.4 releases in November next month, and it's pretty significant for us because Sal's been talking a lot about config modeling. And 3.4 enables that self-onboarding of features. So we used to build the Lego blocks for customers and deliver it to them in packages, and now it's self-onboarding. So that's important. Second is we didn't talk about it a whole lot here because when you do config, there's also an operational state, and right, you want to do the verification of operational state. So we have a component called workflows, and we're enabling a kind of that self-onboarding of verification statement. So you can execute a show and then validate a reply or response in the device. And then something I talked with Greg about at VMworld is that the importance of APIs and APIs becoming much more important. So we're integrating APIs more tightly into our product. For example, we're doing some native API calls to Cisco. Cisco's opened up DevNet for things like checking software compatibility, end-of-life, end-of-sale, pcert, notifications. So we're incorporating those as well as some integration with ServiceNow, for example, on workflow. And then similar to what we did with config modeling, we did the onboarding for you and delivered it, and then you had the lifecycle management. We're doing that with APIs now. And so a good example we just did and demonstrated at ONUG was API calls to AWS because Greg, and we've been talking about, you know, Cisco ACI, and if you look at Viptela or Meraki or other things that have API access, some of these things are controllers, but they're not really automation platforms. And so to automate, you still need to kind of sit on top of that API, right? And so we're exposing more of that to actually automate on top of an API.
Well, there's no difference between an API and a CLI. In a lot of ways, what you'd configure into the CLI and you configure via an API is functionally, you know, I want this filter to do this, or I want this routing protocol to do that. Whether you program it via the CLI or the API, as far as your engine is concerned, is the same thing. It's just the mode of configuration or the what you're configuring that changes, isn't it?
Yeah, I think where I think you get the pain of the API is that if you pick up an API for some vendors, some products, it's a library of calls, and you got to sort through it and figure out even how to consume it. With other product lines, it's like so thin and limited in function, it's hardly usable. So I think the challenge with integrating APIs is really knowing what you want to do, what you want to call. But you're right, Greg, you're doing commands, you're doing write commands and read commands, and you know, it is still very similar.
Yeah.
The difference is it makes it a little bit nicer to integrate because it is a programmatic interface.
But this is the engine that Glueware has. So just to dive off into the technology a little bit, you've got this engine that can devolve all of these things down into function, into these Lego blocks that Sal called them. And you don't have to re-engineer the product to start talking to new types of product or new, you know, like things like SDN controllers or SD-WAN devices. You can talk to them once you can devolve their functionality down into some sort of consistent end-to-end things that I need to be done.
Exactly right. We write the kind of vendor adapter piece, which allows us to read and write, and then we just onboard what we need to, so that the kind of the rapid onboarding and the ability to kind of very quickly solve a customer problem versus like some long proposal of 9 or 10 months of integration, or, you know, even longer. That's really differentiation, is that the fast onboarding once, you know, because the platform delivers all those features.
Fantastic.
So, Mike, if folks want to know more about Glueware, just give them the URL, Twitter, anything you want to help folks find your stuff easier.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ethan. Yeah, glueware.com. That's G-L-U-W-A-R-E. It says glue without the E. And then we're Twitter at Glueware Inc. and LinkedIn as well at Glueware Inc. And then we have a YouTube channel we post videos on.
Excellent. Well, thanks to you, Mike and Sal, for coming on the show today. And our thanks to you for listening today. And again, thank you, Glueware, for sponsoring the Packet Pushers Network. We have podcasts, blogs, and videos, and they're all created for your continuous professional development. Visit packetpushers.net to get a handle on all of our offerings. If you'd like to talk to us, well, you can leave a comment on our website. We have a blog post up for every show that we produce. Tweet at Packet Pushers. You can email us, packetpushers@gmail.com. And then last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.